This is Edward October, host of OctoberPod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, this is Kate from Ignorance Was Bliss. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy Festivus, whatever you celebrate. You know, I live in Salem, and so we have pagans and Wiccans and Satanists and Catholics and Protestants and atheists and all of the flavors, and I don't care how you celebrate it. Just celebrate it in a way that makes you happy, okay? Be good to you. You've earned it.
Hi, this is Jason from Invasion of the Remake Podcast with
Trish
and Sam.
And we'd like to wish everybody, all the listeners of our True Crime Podcast, a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and a joyous New Year. We're going to get together on our spaceship and have a great holiday season. And we hope you will as well.
Happy holidays.
All hail the device.
All hail the device.
All hail the device.
All hail the device.
Hey, Kim.
Hey, Jen.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Did you catch our new listener discretion?
I am so in love with it, I can't even tell you.
I know. Isn't it awesome?
I listened to it at about 5:45 one morning, getting ready for work, and I laughed out loud. Actually, I had to send you the audio.
I know.
I was laughing. I
know.
It was funny.
I giggled the whole
very,
way
very
through.
Clever.
Edward October, you are amazing.
Yeah, it's
we totally,
so good. So good.
And if you guys aren't watching his YouTube, you are so missing out. They are so good. They are
very
so
good.
Fun. His voice is amazing.
It's so good.
Anyway, Edward October, you are awesome. Thank you so much for adopting us, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or I don't know how it came about,
once
but I'm glad
that
we
paper,
found each other.
I'm telling you.
You took
can't
the candy.
Can't get rid of us. Yep.
You took the candy.
Get in the van. Get in the van.
Today we are delivering our surprise for our listeners.
It's a Christmas miracle.
A holiday miracle.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Whatever. Bring a Christmas back. It doesn't matter.
That's right.
Whatever you celebrate, it's a miracle.
It's a miracle if we can pull this off.
It is. Anyway, do you want to tell everybody what a miracle is?
No, you can.
We decided, we're not going to sing, so everybody can.
Well, maybe.
There might be.
Can't make any promises.
You know, Camille on Twitter the other day asked if we were going to do like a season.
Seems everybody has seasons.
Everybody has seasons.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I just thought you just kept chugging along until you died.
Right.
Or your equipment died or whatever. But we decided that we did need to take a little break over the holidays. Camille has family coming in. My family is also, as Camille's family, is also tired of us not being around
very much.
My Christmas
tree's been up for 2 weeks and still doesn't have an ornament on it.
Well, mine's been decorated just because the kids got too anxious and they're the ones that decorated it. Our family needs a little love and affection, so we're going to take a little two-week break, probably start Christmas Eve, I guess.
Yes.
And then we'll be back January 9th.
Yes.
But in the meantime, we decided to give you a little present, which we think you're going to love. You might totally hate, but you can't return it.
Dun, dun, dun.
We threw away the receipt. We are doing the 12 Nightmares Before Christmas.
It's going to be a killer kind of Christmas.
Exactly. So starting today, we are going to do 12 mini-ish episodes up until Christmas Eve Eve.
Eve Eve, 23rd.
The 23rd.
One every day.
One every day.
Just like the 12 days of Christmas.
Mm-hmm. But instead of happy things that your true love gives you, they're horrible, gross, disgusting stories about violence.
Merry holiday, happy Shikanaka, Kwanzaa, something.
Lucky you, right? But obviously you're listening to True Crime Podcasts, so that's kind of what you expect from us.
Exactly. So what you got, Jen?
For the first Nightmare Before Christmas, I'm going to talk about a little Jane Doe that pretty much has grabbed the heart of St. Louis ever since her body was found.
Actually, when I was researching for this and looking up, It had the, let's see, the most baffling case per state.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of interesting. Actually, that's how I found one of mine. But Missouri's was this case.
This one? Really?
Yeah.
This case has always broke my heart. It really has. It's so sad. It's the case of Little Jane Hope Doe. On February 28th, 1983, here in St. Louis, they're down in the city. And if you know, there's a bunch of abandoned buildings and all that.
If you're familiar with St. Louis, it's a very old town, but they're not real good at getting rid of the derelict buildings.
Right. So anyway, down on Clemens Avenue, rummagers were looking for scrap metal. While they were looking around in the basement of this building, one stopped and lit a cigarette to start smoking. Well, when he lit the cigarette, a light was cast just enough that they were able to make out that there was a body laying on the floor.
That's terrible.
Well, it turned out that it was an unidentified African-American girl that was estimated to be between the ages of 8 to 11 years old.
Oh, I thought she was younger.
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
She had been decapitated, and she was wearing a yellow V-neck sweater, which, of course, had blood all over it. Her hands had been bound at the wrists using a red and white nylon rope, kind of like the type that you tie boats with.
A ski rope, sort of?
Kind of like a ski rope. She was laying face down. She just had the yellow V-neck sweater on, nothing else, nude from the waist down. There were no scars on the body. There were no irregularities. There was no way to identify this girl. She looked perfect, except she did not have her head. When the investigators and homicide detectives arrived at the crime scene, they kind of thought that she had been murdered elsewhere because there wasn't any blood. Or there wasn't enough blood for a decapitation to have happened. She was killed and beheaded elsewhere, and she was later dumped in this building. When they went to examine how her head was severed, it was cleanly done. So they thought it must have been like a large carving knife.
Ugh.
Very sharp. It would have to be sharp. I couldn't imagine doing that to a poor little baby.
A person. Anybody.
I can. I don't even like dealing with raw meat. Like when I'm cooking and stuff.
I do.
Well, there you go. An autopsy later showed that she had been raped. And the cause of her death was by strangulation. And she had probably been there about 3 or 4 days before she had been found.
Oh, that's it?
As for the head, this poor baby's head, they never found it.
Never?
Never. They looked around the 16-block perimeter around where she was. They could not find it at all. So without a head, you can't check her dental records. Nor facial reconstruction.
Well, the person knew what they were doing. They didn't. I wonder what they did with it.
I don't know. The homicide detectives working the case scoured the list of children at all the nearby schools, but all the kids were accounted for. There were no children missing. They proceeded to look through the database of missing children, yet nobody had reported her missing. They then conducted a nationwide search, including running ads in every African-American newspaper and magazine in the country, and corresponded with every police agency in every state. At the time, there were 5 possible victims. But they were all ruled out.
So a parent wouldn't report? Like, wouldn't...
You would think if your child was missing, you would report them. Unless you're here in the country illegally.
Hmm.
But even then, I think I would still say my child's missing.
I would think so.
I would. I mean, my kids are pretty much my favorite things most days. You know?
That's interesting. And you said she had no scars on her body. So...
No,
she wasn't, like, abused.
No.
Hmm. Okay.
No. The child's sweater was the only thing that they really had that could pinpoint things to her. And in 83, DNA was, you know, they could only tell the blood type. They couldn't really do any kind of forensics.
Mm-hmm.
The man in charge of the case, he wanted to do everything he could. His name was Leroy Adkins. He took the case and... He was the first black police chief at the time, and he really wanted to get this case solved because he wanted to show all the black people in the community that the police and everybody really did care about them. He did everything he possibly could. He even sent the sweater to a psychic.
Oh, not Sylvia Brown, I hope.
God, no, Sylvia Brown. Because the psychic said they needed to touch it to get the psychic impression.
Mm-hmm.
Well... The sweater was lost in the mail.
See, that's what I was just thinking. I was like, why would you do that? Why would you mail that?
I know. And you would think the psychic would know where it was.
They really...
If it got lost in the mail, the psychic should know where it is.
Good point.
Right. But no, and that...
Was it ever located?
It was never located.
Are you kidding?
And this poor detective, he was devastated. He's like, that was my biggest regret.
Also, I mean, was thinking, like, why wouldn't you just cut a piece of this water and send it so if it did get lost?
You would think, but I guess... I think they were just so desperate that he was willing to do anything. Mm-hmm. So after 9 months, Jane Doe was in the cold room at the St. Louis Medical Examiner's office. Her body still hadn't been claimed.
That's just so bizarre.
So they buried the poor little girl in a white coffin in a pauper's grave at the Washington Park Cemetery in December of 1983. Mm. Four grave diggers in muddy overalls were the pallbearers for this 5-minute service. The Reverend John Hayward Jr. from the Union Memorial Methodist Church said, "We are gathered here to send the body of a girl we do not know, but we feel surely she is known to God."
I can't believe she was never claimed.
No. And it's so sad. There's a picture of, in the St. Louis newspaper that I looked up, there's a picture and it's just two people standing by this little grave. Oh. And then there's the Reverend standing there. Then off to the distance, there's another man. Just, it's heart-wrenching. It's... Okay, so in May of 1984, some students in Livingston, Illinois, raised some money for a white headstone that read, "The saddened hearts were healed in knowing the pain of life is over and the beauty of the soul revealed." And then they put it on the wrong grave.
What?
Trust me.
One job, people.
I know.
You have one job.
Well, no, listen. They put it on the grave that they thought was Jane Doe. They thought. Well, in 2009, the police chief was then Tom Carroll. He tried to exhume the remains. Mm-hmm. So he went to the cemetery. And their records were awful. Everything was just not kept up.
Right.
So he went to where they said the girl's grave was. She wasn't there. But three other bodies were.
Wait a minute.
They found three bodies.
In a
where
casket?
No, just three separate bodies where the grave, where her grave should be, but those bodies weren't baby Jane Doe. Wasn't her.
Did they find her?
Well, at the time, there was some volunteers led by the director of a funeral home. He was hoping to have the little girl reburied in a plot of her own, and he had even bought her a new casket. Mm-hmm. And they were hoping to get the cemetery up and running. Well, they couldn't find it.
Did they ever find it?
Well, at the 30-year anniversary of finding her body, the paper interviewed Leroy Adkins. And at the time, he was like 79 years old. And he said his memory was still bad, but he still thinks about her because she was never identified. And he said that's what bothered him most. He said, "It's unimaginable to me that a kid can come up missing and no one knows a thing. You have a child, 8, 9, 10 years old. There are no relatives, parents, neighbors, schoolmates, or friends who reported her missing. And that's what's most distressing, is how a child that age can't belong to anyone. So it's frustrating and it's unbelievable."
That's what I keep thinking. Like, how is that possible unless... I'll save it. Go ahead.
Right. And then he said that the case has haunted him and it's even given him nightmares. He said, "Besides finding out who she was, the other thing that really bothered me is, did we do everything we possibly could?
Yeah.
And what did we miss?" Mm-hmm. How awful. I mean.
So in order to, because I'm trying to think of scenarios in which you'd have a child go missing. So let's say if she was in a foster home, right? Or an orphan. Do they even say orphan anymore? I don't know. Or school. I mean, she had to be of school age. So nobody knew she was missing unless they.
Or she was. She only had a mother or a father.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just killed them too. And then there's nobody to. But then don't you have an aunt, an uncle, a cousin, somebody?
Sex trafficking. I mean, could she have been a victim of sex trafficking?
But a runaway, I guess. But you'd still like.
There'd be something.
I would think. Okay.
So they decided to exhume the body in 2013 with all the new DNA evidence because police are still trying to find out who this poor little baby is.
Right.
They started in like March of 2013 to find her body, and they didn't find her until June of that year. It took months to find her.
Really?
Finally, they located her by using the camera calibration. So thankfully, with the help of volunteers and various other resources, her remains were unearthed. And they were taken to the St. Louis Examiner's office. And there the researchers from Smithsonian Institution and the University of North Texas recalibrated the bone sampling and minerals and whatnot to narrow down her native origins based on the water she drank, which is amazing.
Cool. Right.
The test revealed that she spent most of her life in one of the numerous southeastern states, including Georgia, Mississippi, Arkansas, Texas, Tennessee, Florida, Louisiana, and North or South Carolina. However,
so cool that they could determine
it's amazing,
that, right?
Isn't it? However, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, their catalog entry originally lists the Midwestern and Mid-Atlantic states also, which is Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana, or West Virginia.
So she's on the right-hand side of the United States.
Pretty much.
From there, somewhere.
Yeah. And they also found out that she had spina bifida.
Oh.
But none of the, she didn't have any of the outward signs of spina bifida.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay. Now, a little child with spina bifida missing.
I mean, they might not have known that she had spina bifida. Hmm. I don't know.
That's, okay. That's interesting. Because maybe if she didn't, and if they heard that, then they'd be like, no, that's not our girl. You know what I mean? If they didn't realize she had it.
Okay. Well, this was 30 years later?
Yeah, I guess.
30 years later?
Yeah, I don't do math. 1983 to...
83, 93, 2003, 40 years later.
Is that right? Yeah, because you're old. Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Though the new scientific testing that they did give them a little bit of hope that they'd be able to identify her properly, it's still a cold case. So she has been reburied in the Calvary Cemetery, which is a beautiful cemetery. So gorgeous. And it was funded by a nonprofit organization called the Garden of Innocence. Mm-hmm. And it's regularly taken care of. And she had been given two nicknames in honor of her life. It's Hope was the first nickname. Mm-hmm. And the other one is Little Jane Doe. So now everybody just calls her Little Jane Hope Doe.
Aww.
In terms of suspects, the list is really short.
Do they have anyone?
They had a few, but there wasn't any evidence. Right. I mean, there was...
Like, they can't even see what city she was killed in.
No. I mean, no head, no nothing. Okay. And, well, I guess they could have taken DNA from her corpse then, too, right?
Yeah, that's what... Or bones, anything.
Bones,
hair.
Yeah. So I guess they could have DNA now, and they could run it through the...
But if it's...
The familial DNA.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they could do that now. But that wasn't even available back in 2013. So maybe this case can open up now. Mm. Maybe we should give little Tom Carroll a call.
Maybe we should.
And said, hey, run it through.
Hmm.
But anyway, finding a person of interest was difficult. But one suspect caught the attention of the detectives. That suspect was Vernon Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the mid-1970s, Vernon Brown was convicted of molesting a 12-year-old girl. Oh. He spent 4 years in jail in Indiana. After his release, 9-year-old Kimberly Campbell was found raped and strangled in a vacant home owned by his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
However, despite being the clear suspect in the murder, not enough evidence could be obtained to charge him with the crime.
What?
I know.
What do you mean there's no evidence?
They just said there wasn't enough evidence. They probably knew he did it, but they just couldn't get enough evidence to build a case.
Did he rape her?
Because you don't want to try. She was found raped. Yeah, and strangled.
Well,
1980.
Don't they have, you know, semen?
Yeah, but back then, 1980,
yeah, but
they could just
semen,
do blood type.
Yeah, I guess.
But it could be anybody's blood type.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
is he still alive? Vernon? Is he still alive?
Well, we're going to find that out, Camille.
Okay, good.
You just.
I pulled a gin there, didn't I?
You did. So, years later, Vernon lived on Enright Avenue in St. Louis, but using a phony name of Thomas Turner.
Little Timmy Turner.
On October 24th, 1986, Vernon arrived home after picking up his stepkids from school. At approximately 3 o'clock, he was sitting in the front porch watching children walk home after being let off the school bus. During this, 9-year-old Janet Perkins was passing by on her 15-minute walk to her residence a few blocks away. Now, remember the Lost Boys episode? Kids are most likely to get abducted to and from the school bus.
So
to and from school. That's when they're likely to get abducted. But she was on a 15-minute walk from being dropped off. And that's when Vernon noticed Janet and enticed her into his house.
And his stepkids are in the house, right?
His stepkids are in the house. And although the stepchildren saw her come inside, Vernon told them to get into their bedrooms, and then he locked their doors from the outside. He locked his stepchildren in their bedrooms.
Unbelievable.
So, within minutes, he took Janet downstairs in this basement, where he tied her feet and only one hand. He then began to strangle her with a rope.
Did he rape her?
While the stepchildren could hear her screams through the air vent. And he did kill her. He did strangle her to death.
So three days in his house?
In his house.
With those other kids in there.
Kids upstairs, they heard the whole thing through the air vents. I know. So 3 days later, the police arrested Vernon after discovering two trash bags containing Janet's body in the alleyway behind his house.
Did those kids never tell their mom?
I would
bet. Or anybody else?
Well, if you heard your stepdad killing somebody down the... Wouldn't you kind of be a little bit afraid to tell?
Yeah, I guess. But if they go to school, I'd tell somebody there. I don't know. I don't know what I'd do.
So Vernon's neighbor testified, saying that he did notice that Janet entered Vernon's house. And after Vernon was arrested, he admitted on videotape that he murdered Janet Perkins. How can you not? He's got witnesses upstairs. Or he's got... His kids are witnesses. Stepkids. Surprisingly, Vernon elaborated further by confessing to the murder of 19-year-old Sonetta Ford a year prior on March 7, 1985. She was strangled by an electrical cord and stabbed multiple times in an apartment basement where Vernon had worked as a maintenance man. Strangely, he was arrested for her murder but let go soon after when he gave homicide investigators another false alias. So during his stint in prison, the police frequently questioned him about other possible victims, and in particularly little baby Jane Hope Doe, but he never confessed to her or her murder or any other murders. But the police always suspected Vernon to be involved in at least 20 unsolved murder cases around the area.
20?
20. 20.
Why would he not?
Do you know how scary it is? I mean, I've always kind of been a little creeped out. I love true crime, you know, and I've always loved true crime. But now that we've been doing this podcast and knowing that all these suspects that have been caught and then, well, we got them on these four murders, but we suspect him on another 50.
Right.
That is terrifying. Terrifying that he could go on that long. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just think they'd like put a tail on him and watch him all the time.
You would think. So in 2005, St. Louis homicide detective Tom Carroll went to the state prison in Bon Terre. And he visited Vernon on death row. Carroll said that he hoped and prayed that this twice condemned killer would confess to Jane Doe before he was executed. Tom Carroll said, personally, I believe Vernon did it. And it was a style. He tied up little girls. And at the time he said, how many child killers are there? Well, Tom, let me tell you.
A lot.
There's a lot. Detective Carroll, his theory is that Jane Doe was the daughter of one of Brown's wives or girlfriends.
Yeah.
And they were scared to say anything. I guess he was a...
Well, obviously he's not a nice person.
Not
but
very nice.
Let me tell you what. I would kill him.
Oh. No matter how many times Detective Carroll went to speak with Vernon Brown, he refused to talk to him. Carroll said he was very cold and totally devoid
of emotion.
Ooh. Totally. On May 18th, 2005... After watching the movie Platoon in his prison cell, Brown was given the lethal injection.
Good.
So if he did kill little Jane Doe or anybody else, we'll never know because that went into his grave with
him. Died, okay, and let's pretend that, I guess, you know what, that is true. If that was the daughter of one of his girlfriends or whatever, he could have killed the girlfriend. And knowing the backstory that maybe that they had no family and he knew that it would never be.
It's just sad. I hope one day they will be able to find out who she is. No one deserves to be buried without a name.
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of Jane Does.
And I'm just going to say this, and this is probably going to be wrong and I'll get hate mail, but shame on the parent if they do know that their child is missing and that they didn't come forward to protect. I mean, if say it, she was an immigrant and they were in the country illegally, I would sacrifice my life for my child. I would sacrifice my freedom for my child.
I think most people would, or they should anyway.
Just unreal.
Interesting.
So anyway, that's the story of little Jane, baby Hope. Little, I don't know, I've been calling her so many different things. Little Jane Hope Doe. That's it.
Well, it was a good, it's enlightening.
Very.
I just can't believe that that would never be solved. Like, even her, who she was.
So anyway, that was our first nightmare before Christmas. I hope you enjoyed it.
And,
or at least, I don't know. What do you say? We don't enjoy murder. Nobody enjoys murder.
No.
Except murderers, I guess. Psychopaths. Psychophants.
Psychos.
Crazy people. I don't know. And I also want to add, each nightmare is an extra...
Body count.
I know, and that sounds so cheesy once it's said out loud, but that's what we did. And we're sorry if we offended people.
So that was one person. My case will have two people. And so on, until you get to 12.
We apologize if that offends people. This all came about because my 12-year-old daughter suggested it.
Yes.
She's like, you know what we should do?
Yeah.
But she wanted us to sing Five Disembodied Heads.
See, that's what
which
I,
is like...
that's yeah. what I thought I wanted to do. Whatever.
Yeah.
All right, Jen, we'll take us out.
All right. Well, we'll see you tomorrow.
Same bat channel, same bat time.
In the meantime,
lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. An anthropologist. An exam revealed that she had spina bifida.
I'm sorry. Okay. Focus. All right, go ahead.
The homicide detectives working the case scoured the list of all the children. After he gave the
Hayden, I'm recording. I'm at Jen's house. I'm recording. I'm not home. Sorry. Hey, it's... But I broke my glasses. You can't say without his glasses.
I know. But what, it's 40-some-odd years old now? 45 now, I guess, right? No? 35?
Math is hard, Jen.
Math is so hard, and it's so early, too.
It is really. 1983, right?
My caffeine hasn't...
So that'd be...
83,
93, 2003,
36 years?
Is that right?
35.
Yeah, put all that out.
Boy, 30-something. I know, it's been a long... Well, we were 13, let's say. We were 13.
That's how I did it, and I minused it. So.
Okay.
Smart. Yeah, thanks.
That's almost algebra. That's almost algebra, Camille.
Pretty good.